Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's our St. Patrick's Day show, so let me wish everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day. And the best way to start is with perhaps a little Irish blessing. And it goes, may you live as long as you want and never want as long as you live. May the saddest day of your future be no worse than the happiest day of your past. May the Lord keep you in his hand and never close his fist too tight. And may God be with you and bless you. May you see your children's children. May you be poor in misfortunes and rich in blessings. And may you know nothing but happiness from this day forward. So, happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. And no better way to start than a little history of St. Patrick. St. Patrick was born to Catholic parents about 385 in Britain. His father was a nobleman and a deacon. But Patrick's privileged life came to an end at age 16 when he was captured by slave raiders from Ireland. With a large group of prisoners, he was transported to the then pagan island. Sold as a slave to a king in the northeast, Patrick had the lonely task of tending the pigs and sheep. In the midst of these harsh living conditions, Patrick's faith flourished as he turned to God in prayer. After being held captive for 6 years, he heard a voice in his sleep say, "Soon you will go back to your homeland." A short time later, he heard the same voice say, "Your ship is ready." Trusting in God, Patrick set out on a 200-mile journey through unknown territory. When he arrived at the ship, the captain at first refused to take him, but Patrick prayed to God for help, and the captain changed his mind. Then began a lifetime of dedicating his life to becoming a priest. He envisioned returning to Ireland to teach the Irish about Christianity. During his 30 years in Ireland, Patrick founded more than 300 churches and baptized more than 120,000 people. Yet he still encountered much opposition. "Daily I expect either murder, robbery, or enslavement," he wrote in his confessions. He escaped from 12 attempts on his life, and he died a natural death on March 17, 461. By the end of the 7th century, many legends had developed about him. One, of course, says he was charmed all the snakes in Ireland and led them to the sea to drown. Another, probably the most popular, is that he used the three-leafed shamrock to explain the concept of the Holy Trinity to unbelievers. This is probably why shamrocks, now Ireland's national flower, are worn by the Irish on St. Patrick's Day. And on St. Patrick's breastplate is written, "Christ be with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me. Christ is me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me. Christ on my right, Christ on my left, Christ where I love, Christ where I sit, Christ where I rise. Christ in the heart of everyone who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks of me, Christ in every eye that sees me, and Christ in every ear that hears me." So a little background on St. Patrick's Day. And it's always a fun time. Corned beef, of course. I love corned beef. It's just terrific. Some black and tans and Guinness. In moderation, of course. And, of course, our show today will be able to talk with our good pal Billy Lawless, one of the great Irishmen in Chicago, the owner of The Gauge and restaurants in and around the downtown area. He always has some stories to tell us. Let's start with a little music from our friend Catherine O'Connell. Irish lass from St. Thomas More Parish on the south side. We see Catherine quite frequently at different functions around Chicago. She's one of the most sought-after songstresses in Chicago. Her version of Immigrant Eyes, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Old Ellis Island was swarming like a scene from a costume ball, decked out in the colors of Europe, on fire with the hope of it all. My father's own father stood huddled with the tired and hungry and scared. Turn of the century pilgrims, bound by the dream that they shared. They were standing in lines just like cattle, poked and prodded and shoved. Some were one desk away from sweet freedom, some were torn from someone they loved. Through that teeming tower of Babel came a young man, confused and alone, determined and bound for America, carrying everything that he owned. Sometimes when I look in my grandfather's immigrant eyes, I see that day reflected. I can't hold my feelings inside. I see him starting with nothing, working hard all of his life. Don't take it for granted, say grandfather's immigrant eyes. Now he rocks and he stares out the window, but his eyes are still just as clear as the day he sailed through the harbor to come ashore on the island of tears. My grandfather's days are numbered, but I won't let his memory die. He gave me the gift of this country and that look in his immigrant eyes. Sometimes when I look in my grandfather's immigrant eyes, I see that day reflected. I can't hold my feelings inside. I see him starting with nothing, working hard all of his life. Don't take it for granted, say grandfather's immigrant eyes. Don't take it for granted, say grandfather's immigrant eyes.
Catherine O'Connell, Immigrant Eyes, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. What does it mean being Irish? Well, being Irish means you will never play professional basketball. You swear very well. At least one of your cousins holds political office. You think you sing very well. You have no idea how to make a long story short. Being Irish means you are very good at playing a lot of very bad golf. There isn't a huge difference between losing your temper and killing someone. Much of your food was boiled. You have never hit your head on the ceiling. You spent a good portion of your childhood kneeling. You're strangely poetic after a few beers. In fact, you're poetic a lot. You will be punched for no good reason a lot. And some punches directed at you are legacies from past generations. In fact, your sister will punch you because your brother punched her. And many of your sisters are Catherine, Elizabeth, or Mary. And one is Mary Catherine Elizabeth. Being Irish means someone in your family is incredibly cheap. it is more than likely you. You don't know the words, but that doesn't stop you from singing. You can't wait for the other guy to stop talking so you can start talking. Irish stew is the euphemism for boil the leftovers from the fridge. You're not nearly as funny as you think you are, but what you lack in talent, you make up for in frequency. There wasn't a huge difference between your last wake and your last kegger party. You are or know someone named Murph. If you don't know Murph, then you know Mac. If you don't know Murph or Mac, then you know Sully or Scully. You'll probably also know Sully McMurphy. Being Irish means you are genetically incapable of keeping a secret. Your parents were on a first-name basis with everyone at the local emergency room. And last but not least, being Irish means your attention span is so short that... Oh, forget it. That's what being Irish means. A little more music from Catherine O'Connell. Patty McGinty. And we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Now Patrick McGinty, an Irishman of note, fell upon a fortune and he bought himself a goat, says he, of goat's milk and goat's cheese, I'm going to have me fill. But when he brought the nanny home, he found it was a bill. Now all the girls, from here to Killaloe, they're all wearing bustles like their mothers used to do, and each wears a bolster beneath her petticoat. She leaves the rest to Providence and Patty McGinty's goat. Now sweet Nora McCarthy the knot was gonna tie. She washed out her trousseau and she hung it out to dry. The goat came along and saw the bits of white. He ate up all her folderol, 'twas on her wedding night. Turn out the lights, she hollered out to Pat. Although I'm your bride, sure I'm not worth looking at. I had two of everything, as I told you when I wrote. But now I've one of nothing all to Patty McGinty's goat. Said a mother to her daughter, now listen, Mary Jane. Who was that old man you were necking in the lane? He had long, wiry whiskers all hanging from his chin. 'Twas only Patty McGinty's goat, she answered with a grin. Then she went away from the village in disgrace. She came back with powder and paint upon her face. She had rings on her fingers and she wore a sable coat. You can bet your hat she didn't get that from Patty McGinty's goat.
Patty McGinty, Catherine O'Connell, we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Sometimes when you host a live radio show, things don't turn out exactly as you expect, and such as the instance today we're supposed to have a guest on our show from the Drury Lane Theater, and unfortunately will not be able to join us. But despite his absence, we do want to talk about the great musical that's playing there at the Drury Lane. Drury Lane Theater was one of the great... regional theaters in and around Chicago, that with the Paramount and a lot of other ones around Chicago, started by Anthony DeSantis, Tony DeSantis, a great guy from the south side of Chicago. In fact, I caddied for him at Beverly Country Club many, many years ago, God rest his soul, and started out at 95th and Western at Drury Lane and opened up Drury Lane downtown and now out in Oak Brook, carried on by his grandsons. Playing there now is a wonderful musical, one of the great musicals, American musicals, in American Paris. Little background. Let's start with a little background. American Paris is a 1951 American musical comedy film inspired by the 1928 orchestral composition An American in Paris by George Gershwin. It starred Gene Kelly, Leslie Caron, Oscar Levant. The film was set in Paris and was directed by Vincent Minnelli, from a script by Alan J. Lerner, of course, from Lerner and Law. The music is by George Gershwin with lyrics by his brother Ira and additional music by Saul Chaplin, the music director. The story of the film is interspersed with dance numbers choreographed by Gene Kelly and set to Gershwin's music. MGM executive Arthur Freed bought the Gershwin musical catalog from George's brother Ira in the late 1940s, since George Gershwin died in 1937. Some of the tunes in this catalog were included in the movie, such as I Got Rhythm, Love Is Here to Stay, I'll Build a Stairway to Paradise, and Swonderful. The climax of the film is the American Paris Ballet, a 17-minute dance featuring Kelly and Caron, set to Gershwin's An American in Paris. It's just remarkable and breathtaking. The ballet sequence cost almost $500,000 to shoot. It was filmed on 44 sets in MGM's backlot. The movie itself, An American in Paris, was an enormous success, garnering 8 Academy Award nominations and winning 6, including Best Picture, as well as earning other industry honors. In 1993, it was selected for preservation by the United States Library of Congress in the National Film Registry for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. It's ranked number 9 among the American Film Institute's greatest movie musicals. So, a little background about An American in Paris. And now it's being presented in a bit of a variation, not much, just a bit, at Drury Lane Theater in Oakbrook. And it is a breathtaking performance. If you have the opportunity to see it, please. It's only going to be shown there. It's only going to be playing till the end of the month. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience in the theater. And I would suggest for children too, let's say in later grammar school, definitely in high school, of course, college and adults. It's just a wonderful experience in the theater. And just an example of what how inspiring it is to spend time in a theater and feel good about it when you leave. There's a essay written by the dramaturge Joseph Pendelsky. And a dramaturge, we've had the opportunity of having Roger Pines, who is the dramaturge from the Lyric Opera, on our show frequently, explaining different operas. Gives a little background about the story about the opera, but a dramaturge is a professional within a theater or opera company who deals mainly with research and development of plays or operas, explaining their various styles, their interconnectedness, and the way they write. A dramaturge provides historical and cultural research into the play or opera and its setting. So it gives you a little background of what you're going to experience when you go to the theater, what the story is about. So it allows you the opportunity. We've said this on the show before and talked this with various people in the arts, that if you know the story, you're not intimidated. There's not a challenge as to what you're seeing because you already know what the story is about, and you're able to sit there and enjoy the art of whether it's ballet or whether it's opera, whether it's vocal, whether it's symphonic, and just enjoy being and enjoying the art of the music. And the dramaturge, Joseph Pendelsky, wrote a little essay about this Parisian Rhapsody, An American in Paris. And he starts with a quote by Craig Lucas. Craig Lucas was the writer of the book, An American in Paris, for the musical at Drury Lane. And Craig says, "There's no reason to recreate the movie. It is sui generis." And sui generis is a Latin term which means it's in a class by itself. It's unique, and you could never replicate it. Joseph writes, "While a bit grand in its phrasing, Craig Lucas makes a valid point about the film An American in Paris. It is sui generis, a thing unto itself. Its legendary cast and creative team set the standard for Hollywood musicals. Glitzy stars involved, but not overly complicated stories, stunning visuals. An American in Paris transported audiences out of humdrum lives and into vibrant Parisian locations with glamorous people. So, why adapt it for the stage?" Craig's answer to that is, simply put, times have changed. When the film premiered in 1951, American audiences were settling into peacetime life. The film catered to this new suburban reality with Alan J. Lerner's screenplay setting the Gershwin songs in a Paris unaffected by World War I. No unsettling mentions of Nazis, of battles, blemish the film's travelogue-esque opening. Instead, cars, fresh flowers, and gorgeous fountains punctuate idyllic Parisian scenes. You cannot tell the city has just been devastated by 4 years of occupation and starvation. Similarly, its central characters seem largely untouched by any wartime traumas. For men and women who has just endured one of history's most horrific conflicts, their resilience seems uncanny. Little different, though, in the way Craig and his staff have put this together at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. Today, we have intimate awareness of how war taunts and haunts both soldiers and civilians long after the conflict ends. We know the real cost of war. Lerner's screenplay only flirts with this reality. Craig Lucas's embraces it. His stage version of An American in Paris opens in a city rife with nationalist rage, haunted by pain, deprivation, and fear. A little different than what we see in the movie, but touching nonetheless. The city and its people have not had the opportunity to heal, and his version of An American in Paris shows us healing through art and culture. Christian Dior's fashions the essays of Albert Camus, the feminist advocacy of Simone de Beauvoir, and other progressive visionary French and international cultural figures propel the rebirth of Paris after the war. Cultural served as France's pole star to recovery in an era filled with food shortages, decimated infrastructure, and confusion. Lucas seizes on this and infuses it into the script. Similar to France's rebirth after the war, the art of artistic expression reveals truth for Adam, Jerry, Liza, Henri, and Milo, letting them see the world with fresh eyes and find their places within it. This American in Paris, the one at Drury Lane Oakbrook, celebrates creativity's power to trump war's miserable effects and set society on a path towards brighter and happier days. That's just a wonderful explanation of what you're going to see at the Drury Lane Oakbrook, and very much recommended for everyone. And Drury Lane Theater proudly presents the final show in its 2019-2020 season, the regional premiere of the beautifully captivating Gershwin musical, An American in Paris. Leading the cast are Josh Drake as American G.I. Jerry Mulligan and Leigh Ann Esty as Liza Dessen. Drake can currently be seen on Broadway in Disney's Aladdin, and Esty returns to An American in Paris after playing the role of Liza on the show's national tour. This Tony Award-winning musical features music and lyrics by George Gershwin and Ira Gershwin with book by Craig Lucas and is directed and choreographed by Lynn Kurzel Fermato. An American in Paris runs through the end of this month at Drury Lane Theater, 100 Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. A tale inspired by hope and possibility, An American in Paris brings breathtaking moments of dance and song to the musical stage. Jive along with Jerry Mulligan, an American GI doing his best to make it as a painter in the bustling city of Paris following the end of World War II. The storied streets of the City of Lights become the dance floor to a ravishing and passionate voyage into art, friendship, and love in the aftermath of the war. Based on the Academy Award-winning film, this Grammy Award nominee also won 4 Tony Awards for its heart and dedication. It will have you leaping to your feet and dancing along from the very first number. And it is a wonderful experience in a theater. So, if you'd like tickets, again, it's playing till the end of the month. Drury Lane, Oakbrook, 630-530-0111. An American in Paris. Well, I'm going to start my conversation with my next special guest with an Irish friendship wish. May there always be work for your hands to do. May your purse always hold a coin or two. May the sun always shine on your window pane. May a rainbow be certain to follow each rain. May the hand of a friend always be near you. May God fill your heart with gladness to cheer you. This St. Patrick's Day, celebrate at The Gage, where owners Bill and Billy Lawless welcome Chicago's Irish community and those who are just Irish for the day on one of the city's favorite holidays. 2 generations of the Lawless family are behind the festive atmosphere at The Gage. They regularly play host to Irish diplomats and have even previously welcomed the President of Ireland on this cheerful day. All are invited to enjoy a lineup of authentic menu specials, live music, and good cheer. Located just blocks from the Chicago River, Carousers can visit the iconic Michigan Avenue restaurant after watching the traditional river dying, maybe not this year, and parade. Maybe not this year either. Diners will savor Irish fare, washed down with a selection of traditional Irish beers, whiskeys, and specialty cocktails. Available during lunch and dinner service, the Gage's St. Patrick's Day menu is available through March 17th. In addition to the ever-popular fish and chips, my favorite, of course, bangers and mash, hot corned beef sandwich, Cole Cannon, and a lot of great things. I'll let our next guest explain it. On the line with us right now is the award-winning restaurateur, widely recognized Chicago celebrity, a leader in the restaurant and hospitality industry in Chicago, one of the brightest stars in Chicago's dining scene, most certainly one of the most welcoming Irishmen in Chicago, now celebrating with his dad, the Senator Bill Lawless, St. Patrick's Day, like no one else can. At his award-winning restaurant, The Gage, located at 24 North Michigan, our good pal, Billy Lawless. Billy, welcome to the St. Kevin Morse Show, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thanks, Kevin. Is that it? Are we done?
Well, you know, I'm sorry to hear what we heard this morning, huh?
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah, they canceled the parade, obviously, and the dying of the River Green, just obviously for health reasons and public safety. You got to do it.
Yeah. Well, you'll still be able to. You're still going to be home for St. Patrick's Day and enjoying things, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We did, unfortunately, we're making some moves on our entertainment right now, but we're definitely going to be having our special menu starting Friday all the way through St. Patrick's Day itself on Tuesday the 17th. But unfortunately, just with the parade not happening and just for public safety also, we're unfortunately canceling our live entertainment for Saturday.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because it's one of the fun days of the year in the Gage.
Oh, absolutely. Well, every day's a fun day at the Gage, though. You have to say that. Every day.
Depending on the whiskey levels, absolutely.
You know, it's funny. Last year we had the opportunity of talking to the senator on the show, your dad.
And this year
we have the son on. Next year we're going to have the Holy Ghost. It'll be great.
There you go. Yeah, that's a character. Yeah, he's got to head back to Ireland by the end of the week because this is the final. The Senate's in session until March 30. Then they dissolve the Senate because of the election that happened last month. So they're trying to form a new government now. So. Legislative-wise, the Senate shuts down on the 30th, and then they'll start the elections for the new Senate.
Well, of course, we'll miss them around here, but, you know, it is a special time, and St. Paddy's Day is always a special celebration, and the Lawless family has been in the Moore family for many years. You're going to have some great things. I love corned beef. I really do. I just love corned beef. I could eat it five times a year, but Kimberly doesn't want to cook it that much, but I enjoy it. And there's other great things that you have on the menu. Tell us about what your menu is going to show.
Oh, for sure. Well, we're doing a wonderful smoked haddock is a big thing on the coast in Ireland, so we're doing a really nice smoked haddock cake with a little spicy horseradish mustard. It's just a real vibrant dish. We got a lamb shepherd's pie as well, just to mix up a little bit with a little Irish cheddar whipped potato on top that's baked. That's really delicious.
Now, what's in the shepherd's pie?
So traditionally, it's a lamb stew. So it's some people make it with a more of a red wine sauce. We traditionally do it now with a Guinness braise. So you get that sort of rich flavor from the Guinness stock, and then it's always baked with whipped potato on top, piping hot, little celery root, chipini onions, carrots.
That's
pretty good.
I'm hungry for it right now.
Yeah.
And Finn and Hattie, that's what the smoked haddock is, right?
Yeah, so smoked haddock, I mean, haddock is just, it's a bit like salted cod.
Right.
It's got a little more flavor, so... Yeah, I mean, smoked fish is very popular, well, especially in sort of the Atlantic region. If you go, like, from Ireland all the way up to Scandinavia and whatnot, like the cold waters, smoked fish is very popular.
Mm-hmm. And Cole Cannon.
For us. Cole Cannon is just essentially, it's whipped potato with different forms of braised cabbage, and some people keep it vegetarian, some people would add, you know, bacon or smoked bacon, smoked pork, but depending on people's preferences. But, you know, a lot of butter, salt and pepper, and a good braised cabbage is the base.
Now, how many years? 10 years? 11 years?
No, we opened the Gage in 07. We just missed Paddy's Day in 07.
Okay,
we're meant to get open, and we opened a month after St. Patrick's.
Oh,
we opened on the 17th of April 2007.
Wow, things have been going wonderful since then.
Yeah, it's been a good ride down here. So, but the neighbors really embraced us the minute we opened, and you know, it's just gone from strength to strength, and just it's really fun. It's very, very humbling just seeing the different. I mean, just with your own family, the different generations coming and going, and you know, having families, and it's mad. I mean, when I first met you, you weren't a granddad.
No, that's right. And now we celebrate all the birthdays there, and I think Shanna's going to be there this afternoon. I think.
Fantastic! I'll be down there in a few minutes. It's just lovely. We have so many people who care about us, and you know, I'm just so humbled by just that. The regular business that we have, like the people who are just really passionate about what we do and are just care for what we do, it's just lovely.
Well, they care about you, Billy, because you and your staff care about the people that come in and enjoy your hospitality. I think that's, I mean, you can have great food and everything, but if you, people aren't welcomed when they come in, they're not going to come in a second time, and they're going to tell people, yeah, let's pass on this one and go to the next one. That's not the case with the Gage. The whole staff, everybody there, you change your managers on a frequent basis and promote them, and I think that's just a wonderful thing because then they're invested in wanting to make sure that this is a successful operation, and this operation is a personal operations, the personal, you know, kind of a investment in their own success.
No, absolutely. I always say, like, my ego is vested in the experience of the guest, and, you know, my team believes that too, because they're just, you know, if you look after the guest, good things happen, and, you know, we love to develop from within. Rebecca Peterson now is my general manager. I mean, she started with me as a server and became our head trainer and our head banquet captain. Now she's running the whole kit and caboodle. You know, Pat Doyle started with me as a bartender, right. And now he's the director of operations for my whole group. He's in charge of 5 restaurants.
Pat's a great guy. We just think the world of him. And the young people you have as your managers on a regular basis, they're just wonderful. And that's something that people remember, as I said before. Now, you have other restaurants. You have the Gage. You have a Canton right next door.
Sure. The Beacon Tavern up by the Tribune, or by the Wrigley Building, just off Michigan Avenue. The Dolson in Westtown and Grand and Halstead, and then Cota de Volpe up on Southport and Henderson.
All very successful. Do you see any difference because of this issue with the virus?
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. Really? Yeah, I mean, it's a little scary right now. I mean, I think it's going to be, personally, I think it's going to be a brutal 2 months, and we're just actually... And later this afternoon, we're just going into a planning meeting on just cash flow and burn rate and see where we can, you know, mitigate our liability, so to speak, for the next couple of months, because there's definitely going to be a big drop off. Like, the hotels are way down. There's obviously not much international travel, and even internal travel is pretty much coming to standstill. So, but, you know, I think it'll be, you know, it will crest, and then things will get back to normal, hopefully within 2 months.
Well, you know, I've noticed with all these hotel rooms that aren't going to be booked now, there's got to be a lot of empty hotels that are looking for people to come down, yet people don't want to travel. I was at the Kimberly, and I went to see Madame Butterfly last week, and you wouldn't know it by the turnout there. I mean, the place was packed, and and some of the places you go now, I guess they're canceling some basketball tournaments and stuff like that. It's a whole different thing, you know. And you know how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I mean, life goes on. At the same token, you know, some people get more freaked out by what's happening than others, and you know. But at the end of the day, you know, we as a community, we got to do what's right. So. Unfortunately, we are where we are right now, but, you know, it will pass.
Oh, sure.
Thankfully.
Sure, it will. It will. Yeah. Since you started, what do you see has changed in the hospitality industry, especially in your restaurant, and where do you see the changes going in the year or two coming up?
That's a good question. I think the investment in restaurants in general has ramped up immensely since I first opened the Gage 13 years ago, just like the private equity money that's now in restaurant groups, and that's really changed the sort of marketplace in terms of expansion. In some ways, I think the city is overdeveloped right now as it relates to restaurants. There's probably too many restaurants, and there will be a small reckoning in the next year or two, just with the way places have expanded and with rents, you know, that may not be sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, I think, hospitality is still hospitality. You still got to look after people. That hasn't changed.
Sure.
For sure, the online ordering and delivery is like a huge thing now. And with ghost kitchens and whatnot, you know, younger people's choices are changing. And then the advent of the food halls, which are certainly an interesting and I think pretty fun concept. Mm-hmm. It just again depends on traction and location to the viability of them.
How about the delivery? You experiencing a lot of that?
Yes and no. I mean, a couple of my concepts are definitely seeing a higher increase in delivery traffic. Just, mm-hmm. but not everything travels well.
And, yeah, right.
My biggest pet peeve with all the delivery services, like I've no control over anything once it leaves the restaurant. So who knows what's happening with the product while it's been driven there? If the package fell over,
right.
So that's a big issue. And then you know the cut of the delivery services is very high. So while it's still a sale, it doesn't translate to the bottom line a lot of the time.
Right. Nothing better than stopping in at the gauge and having a beer at the bar and having a little dinner in one of the very comfortable booths or tables and sit in front of the fireplace, and that's the best way to enjoy it.
Why not? Have more than one beer.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure, my pal. You and I have been friends for a long time since you opened, and we'll continue getting the word out. With a similar focus on sterling quality and superb style, the Gage has become a favorite of locals and visitors worldwide. Over the years, the Gage has been one of Chicago's most booked restaurants, effortlessly blending European influence with American style. The restaurant serves refined, rustic fare complemented by an innovative libations program in a lively, convivial setting. Recently celebrating 13 years in business, the Gage continues to be both a respected classic and an innovative leader in Chicago's dining scene. On the line with us right now is our good pal, Billy Laws. Our best to the senator, if you would, please.
No worries.
And tell him we said hello, and certainly Patrick Doyle. And we're going to get down there for the holiday. You'll see, like I say, you'll see Shannon and Greg and the boys this afternoon. But
good stuff. I'll be around. I look forward to seeing them.
You know, the virus be damned. We'll still be celebrating St. Patrick's Day, my pal.
Amen to that. Thanks,
okay, my pal. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Billy.
Take care.
Talk to you, my pal. Billy Lawless, one of our good pals and the owner with his dad, the senator, Bill Lawless, of the Gage on Michigan Avenue 24. North Michigan, one of the great restaurants in Chicago. We've enjoyed it for years, and we wish him all the best, and certainly he deserves it. For information, 312-372-4743. Well, let's enjoy a little music again with...
Take two?
Yeah, take two. Okay.
Go ahead.
Let's enjoy a little music again from Catherine O'Connell, The Isle of Innisfree, and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
I've met some folks who say that I'm a dreamer, and I've no doubt there's truth in what they say. But sure, a body's born to be a dreamer. He loves are far away. Precious things are dreams unto an exile. They take him o'er the land across the sea. Especially when it happens he's an exile from that dear lovely isle of Innisfree. And when the moonlight peeps across the rooftops of this great city, wondrous though it be, I scarcely feel its wonder or its laughter. I'm once again back home in Innisfree. Wander o'er green hills through dreamy valleys and find a peace no other land could know. I hear the birds make music fit for angels and watch the rivers laughing as they flow. Tenderly behold. folks I love around the turf fire gathered. On bended knee, the rosary is told. But dreams don't last, though dreams are not forgotten. And soon I'm back to stern reality. But though they pave the footways here with gold dust, I still would choose the Isle of Ishwe. Though they pave the footways here with gold dust, I still would choose my Isle of Ishwe.
The Isle of Innisfree, Catherine O'Connell. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago coming across a very inspirational poem. And you've heard it before in bits and pieces. It's called Desiderata. Desiderata is in a Latin word that means things that are yearned for. And in the context of the poem that we're going to read here, it means essential things. And a little background about the poem. The common myth is that the Desiderata poem was found in a Baltimore church in 1692 and is centuries old of unknown origin. Desiderata was in fact written about 1920, although some say as early as 1906, and certainly copyrighted in 1927 by lawyer Max Ehrman from Terre Haute, Indiana. The Desiderata myth began after Reverend Frederick Cates reproduced the Desiderata poem in a collection of inspirational works for his congregation in 1959 on church notepaper headed The Old St. Paul's Church, Baltimore, A.D. 1692, the year the church was founded. Copies of the Desiderata page were circulated among friends. In fact, some were given as a Christmas message to their friends. And the myth grew, accelerated particularly when a copy of the erroneously attributed Desiderata was found at the bedside of deceased Democratic politician Adlai Stevenson in 1965. Whatever the history of Desiderata, the Ehrman's prose is inspirational and offers a simple positive credo for life. So allow me to share this with you. Desiderata by Max Ehrman. Go placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and the ignorant, because they too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexations to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter, for always there will be a greater and lesser person than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is perennial as the grass. Take kindly to the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy. Very interesting. Desiderata by Max Ehrman. Thought I'd share that with everyone. And certainly something, words to live by, and certainly something to revisit every once in a while. And again, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, some Irish thoughts written by Kevin McCarthy from South Holland. A little poem, "We're All Irish for a Day." Kevin writes, "I've never kissed the Blarney Stone, but Blarney's in my blood, although my sainted mum tried hard to nip it in the bud. I'll sing you honest stories of how life has made me wise, and then my wife can tell you that they're all a pack of lies. To tell the truth, the Guinness is too bitter on my tongue, but who'd drink with an Irishman who's sipping Coke and rum? Don't tell the lads at Shannon's I'd be shunned for blasphemy. I hate corned beef and cabbage, but I'm Irish as can be. So, raise a pint of bitters to the orange and the green, or fill that cup of coffee with some Bailey's Irish cream. The rocky road to Dublin's many thousands of miles away, but here in old Chicago, we're all Irish for a day. I'm known for speaking Gaelic when I've put a few away. I never had a lesson. Who knows Gaelic anyway? I've never seen Killarney, but I've been to River Dance. I'm off to see the Rovers every time I get the chance. It's so good to be the Irish in the city by the lake. It's good to wear a shamrock and to drink a shamrock shake. My friends will all forgive me if my story's all a lie. They'll throw me a wild party the day after I die. So, raise a pint of bitters to the orange and the green, or fill that cup of coffee with some Bailey's Irish cream. The rocky road to Dublin's many thousand miles away, but here in old Chicago, we're all Irish for a day." "We're All Irish for a Day" by Kevin McCarthy from South Island, so we thought we'd share that. Well, we're going to jump over to another celebration at this time of year. Of course, we've enjoyed St. Patrick's Day, and the fact that I'm both Irish on my father's side and Italian on my mother's side, we have to celebrate St. Joseph. So maybe we'll go a little Italiana with Volare, Fly Away. And we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Penso che un sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipingevo le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso venivo dal vento rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito. Volare, oh, cantare, oh, nel blu dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù, e volavo, volavo felice, più in alto del sole ed ancora più su. Mentre il mondo pian piano spariva lontano laggiù, una musica dolce suonava soltanto per me. Volare, oh, cantare, oh, 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 nel dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù, ma tutti i sogni nell'alba svaniscono perché, quando tramonta la luna li porta con sé, ma io continuo a sognare negli occhi tuoi belli, che sono blu come un cielo trapunto di stelle. Volare, oh, cantare, oh, nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù, e continua a volare felice più in alto del sole ed ancora più su, mentre il mondo pian piano scompare negli occhi tuoi blu. La tua voce è una musica dolce che suona per me. Volare, cantare, oh, 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 nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù, nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù.
Great Italian song, Volare. My uncles used to sing that to me. Italian uncles used to sing that to me in celebration of St. Joseph's Day. Volare, of course, meaning to fly away. Cantare, meaning to sing. And nel blu, dipinta di blu. In the blue, painted blue skies. Felice di stare lassù. Happy to be up there. Enjoying St. Joseph's Day in the blue skies of Chicago, right? The feast day of St. Joseph is celebrated on March 19th every year, a couple days after St. Patrick's Day. St. Joseph's Day is a Roman Catholic feast commemorating the life of St. Joseph, the stepfather of Jesus and husband of the Blessed Virgin Mary. People with very strong religious association, often those of Southern Italian descent, typically celebrate St. Joseph's Day, March 19th, to be St. Joseph's birthday. During a famine in Sicily, when food was scarce and many people were starving, the poor people had only their faith to rely on. St. Joseph was known as the protector of the Holy Family, and Italians had strong family relationships. So they prayed for St. Joseph to intercede for them as they could have successful crops. Their prayers were answered, and the famine came to an end. In gratitude, people promised to make annual offerings of their most precious possession, which was food, in St. Joseph's honor. Today, the faithful erect St. Joseph's tables, which are set to honor St. Joseph. They are filled with beautiful and elaborate foods, including meatless dishes such as stuffed artichokes, carciofi, pasta and fish, as well as breads, cookies, pastries, cakes, and other delicacies. Each table is blessed by a priest and presided over by a statue of St. Joseph. A stalk of lily blossoms, votive candles, and a lace tablecloth are other typical items used to decorate the feast table. When you visit a St. Joseph's table, you often receive gifts of fava beans and breads. Fava beans play an integral part of the celebration because this was the food that saved the Italians and the Sicilians from starvation. The bean is said to bring good luck, and it is believed that if the St. Joseph's bread is kept in the home, the family will never starve. So, for all our paisans and St. Joseph's Day, March 19th. Have an enjoyable celebration. And let's continue with our Italian music. Arrivederci, Roma. Thank you. Well, that was very enjoyable, celebrating St. Patrick's Day on March 17th and St. Joseph's Day on March 19th for our Irish and Italian relatives and friends, and we wish the best of the holidays to both of them. That about does it for our show today, and I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our good pal Billy Lawless from The Gage. What a great place to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, before and after. 24 North Michigan. For information, 312-372-4743. And again, if you get the chance, the George Gershwin Classic Musical, An American in Paris, at the end of this month at the Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook. For information, 630-530-0111. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today, we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. But let me add an Irish blessing. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Joseph's Day. Forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose the music, the music.